If you want to do a gay, bi, whatever it is, just you have to make the character likable, agreeable. If it's like, you know, an action comic, like you said, you know, it's got to be like, you know, just this badass, awesome character. And if you don't do that and all you focus on is whatever you're trying to push, that's bad writing, in my opinion. And that's what ruins stories.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P, here yet again with another one of these fantastic, pretty animations that they tell me there's a person behind. I think it's just AI trying to confuse me. But why don't you introduce yourself here, Mr. Calvin Galata?
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Calvin Galata here. Very happy to be here, by the way. Thank you for having me on, Nikki P. Appreciate it.
Well, let's kind of start things out by giving everybody a little bit about your background and how you came to this world. Right now, you are promoting a comic book. Why don't you... tell us how you decided to get into comic books in the first place.
Well, it was a long process of a decision, really. I had been writing for a little while, and I never ever thought about writing a book, let alone, you know, doing a comic. But as I got older, and as I started noticing this trend in comics and in some books that I was reading, where instead of focusing on story, character building, just getting lost and immersed in the world that the author is attempting to create for you. There's always, well, not always, there at the point that I was reading in, there seemed to be some agenda being injected of some sort, and I didn't really care for that. And what was really the tip, excuse me, I have lunch stuck in my throat. Ah. What was really the tipping point for me was, and I don't remember the issue, but it was an Iceman comic. And there was, it was one of the ones where they kind of reinvented his sexuality, so to speak. And I was like, no, I'm done. This is my tipping point. Cause Iceman was my favorite, X-Men. And they just completely ruined him, in my opinion.
He wasn't furry and blue enough for me, so.
fair enough. But yeah, I just decided that, you know, maybe I can try. Maybe I can, you know, I have a couple of stories that I've written. Maybe I can try my own comic. And as I was making that decision, I've said this before, but I kind of narrowed it down to about three stories that I wanted to tell. And I chose Underworld Dawn because I figured there wouldn't be a lot of competition. You know, everybody has a superhero story. And I'm like, you know, I don't really know anybody who's doing, you know, basically like, you know, Godfather, Goodfellas, you know, in a separate dimension called the Underworld. So I might try that and see what happens. And here we are.
Well, coincidentally, I've started doing the new run of Dick Tracy.
Oh, yeah.
I've been having a lot of fun with that. Cause
oh, God, that's the name I haven't classic. Heard in a long time. You know, that Obi-Wan Kenobi meme. But I do know what you're talking about. Yeah, but I have not heard Dick Tracy for a long, long time.
I can't even remember what company is springing up. I think it's Mad Cave, but they started a run, and it's been pretty fun so far. I mean, I've never been a superhero guy. I'm more of like a horror guy, when it comes to comics. But just the hard boiled detective stories work really well in that medium too. But what you're telling is, as you describe it, it's one part Goodfellas, but as I look at the character in front of me, that's not the whole story, obviously.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I see a little bit of inside baseball on some of the characters. So, Clavius, I literally looked at Michael Corleone and I'm like, all right, I got to have the slick back black hair. I got to have, you know, those cheekbone features. And I definitely took inspiration off of that character to make Clavius, as far as his look goes anyway.
When you, I'm trying to think about how to phrase this. Is it the stories and the way they're approaching things and you just not liking it? Or is there a certain amount of like intrusion on the space that also bothers you when it comes to the, you know, the I guess the comics takeover that happened?
I don't think it's so much that I don't like the story. You know, there are people who won't like my story, and that's perfectly fine. But, you know, I don't think it will, you know, make them want to tell their own story. At least I hope they don't hate my story that much to say, hey, this guy's story sucks. I'm going to make my own. I'd rather inspire people to make stories by liking my story. But yeah, I don't think it's so much that I didn't like the story, because you cannot like a story for, you know, very valid reasons. Maybe, you know, you're reading a story and, you know, it becomes too, like, dirty for you. And by that, I mean, like, you know, blood, guts, gore, and things like that. Or maybe there's not enough action in it. Maybe the story's too slow. There are various reasons you can, you know, not like a story that are perfectly valid. For me, it's been just really the bastardization of characters that already have a long history and have already been developed to look and act a certain way. And then when you completely destroy that because you have something you're trying to push, whatever it is, it's annoying and I hate it. And it's become this constant thing that I've noticed. And so that's really what pushed me to do my own thing. And, you know, if you're being paid to do it, you know, whether it's Marvel or DC and, you know, that's your thing, hey, you got to pay the bills. Totally get it. And, you know, I respect having to provide for your family and all that stuff. If you're being paid to do it and they say, hey, we want A and we're going to pay to do A, and that's what you do, I can't begrudge you for doing that. What I can begrudge people for is if there is a purposeful reasoning behind some agenda you're trying to push, whatever side of the aisle that may be. And that's what I hate.
Well, what's funny to, or I guess, and this is the approach that I would take is like, I would feel forced to just have to write like the gayest character ever, but like make it the most badass character ever, just because like there's that the temptation was like, no, this isn't about gay. This is about you write she characters. I'm going to make the coolest gay character that's ever existed. Just to kind of throw it at their, just to throw it at their face. Like, you guys suck, not gay people.
I think a good example of that is, have you seen that? I think it's a TV show, Black Sails.
I've never watched it, but it did look interesting. It's like the Pirates one, right?
Right. So if I recall correctly, nobody attack me in the comments, but if I recall correctly, the main male lead, the captain, he ends up being gay, but you don't find out till much later because it doesn't really matter. The only way you find out is because, oh, I'm sorry, spoiler alert, I should have said that. but the only reason why you find out is because there's like a flashback. They don't make it a central part of his character. They don't, you know, like shove it down your throat or anything. It's just, there's a backstory and you just, you have to find out, but he's a badass character. So that, to me, that's a perfect example.
What's even funny is like, is they can make it a central element of a character and still have it be like entertaining. I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and Captain Jack, like, one of the parts of his character is like, not that he was gay, but they basically he'd screw anything, and like it makes for a funny character trait. Like he flirts with everybody in the show, but he's like, he's got an indomitable charm that like you gotta like the guy, and so it works for him. And it's like there's a way to write a character and not to, like, it is so much like. It's like, even like you want to blame it, oh, well, you made it a central point of their character, but even that you can still not suck at doing. The bottom line is this: we have such crappy writers that have gotten a hold of the industry.
100%. Yeah. If you know, perfectly agree. As you said, if you want to do a gay, bi, whatever it is, just you have to make the character likable, agreeable, If it's like, you know, an action comic, like you said, you know, it's got to be like, you know, just this badass, awesome character. And if you don't do that and you, all you focus on is whatever you're trying to push, that's bad writing, in my opinion. And that's what ruins stories. Like, so that's hopefully what I'm hopeful that people like Furika and Vincenza. They're my two bi characters. And, you know, I've made it very obvious that they're bi. In the first issue, and you see it even more in the second issue. And I'm hoping that I can make them, you know, likable enough to where people don't think that, you know, I'm pushing an agenda, because I'm most certainly not, because I hate that, as I've already said. I made them that way for story reasons, and, you know, that will unfold as the story goes on.
Nice. So, once again, you kind of liken this to like a Godfather type tale. Obviously, the visual style is not very classic Italian. So how does that kind of come together?
Well, I like anime, I'll be honest. If you can't tell.
My daughter loves all of your work, but your artwork, by the way.
Oh, well, tell her I said thank you. I'm so happy she does. It's also a cost thing. So, and, you know, for people who, you know, may be watching this and don't know, different art styles have a different price tag on them. And at least in my experience and from, you know, my small journey that I've taken so far, I have come to know that different art styles have a different price tag. Some artists will bill you, you know, let's say it's like $300 a page, no matter the art style. If they can do it, it's $300 a page, no matter what art style you choose. Others are like, okay, for this art style, it's, you know, this much. For this art style, it's, you know, this much. But again, in my experience, different art styles, different price tag. And this particular art style was one that I could afford. It's one that, to me, looks absolutely gorgeous. And it's got that, you know, anime style to it. But, you know, it's also kind of got those, I don't know the art terms, the harder color palette. And by that, I mean, you know, it's not this bright and cheery, you know, super neon-y colors that you see in some animes. The colors are more grounded. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for here. So that's kind of what I wanted for a darker tale. I didn't want it to, you know, have these beautiful, you know, springtime colors, and then, you know, you got people having their intestines torn out and their spines ripped up through their, you know, mouth. And I don't want that to, you know, with, you know, pretty colors. That's, you know, it's kind of a mix that doesn't look, you know, visually like, I didn't expect that from this color palette. It's weird.
Fun. I'm excited to read the book. You, when you talk about it, there's a little bit of, like, I don't know, did you ever watch the, you know, it's Comedy Central show, Ugly Americans?
No, I didn't.
It was a weird show. It involved like a whole, basically an alternate dimension version of New York City where you had like monsters living amongst people, and like there's like a whole class of demons from hell that like ran companies and stuff. And it's like, yeah, this, what is this, the main character was dating a demon, and then like her ex-boyfriend was a demon, was always hanging around, like it just made for like an entertaining narrative.
Yeah,
but it also meant that there was like a lot of hyper gore going on around like the city and stuff, like as people, you said, get spines ripped out of them and whatnot. So there's just like elements of those things like that to me are fun, funny, whatever. I imagine are going to be part of the story.
Yeah, and it's not, so one thing that I told on the Drink with Crazy show with Royce is it's going to get to, you know, berserk levels of, you know, gore and just uncomfortability as far as like reading it, watching it, seeing it. And, you know, I said on there that, you know, I gave the studio a little bit of a teaser of what happens in the future issues. And they said that the artist might not be comfortable drawing some of those scenes because they're pretty graphic. And so I may have to, you know, change up how I do certain scenes. And I also want people to know that, and I should have said this earlier, but I didn't. So I'm saying it now, of course. You're not going to be thrown into a scene that is gory or sexual in nature or whatever without some sort of warning. Like, you're not going to turn the page and it's just suddenly there. I'm going to lead up to it gradually, you know, so the first couple issues are going to get, it gets gorier as the story goes on. The first couple issues are not going to be as bad as some of the later issues. The later issues get, you know, pretty up there in terms of how how hard some of the scenes are to read and look at. And that's purposeful. Because again, you know, I don't want to just throw you right in the thick of it in the first, you know, few issues.
Well, I mean, you look at any of those old mob movies, they always start with talking. It's when talking doesn't go anywhere that the stuff starts happening and horse heads end up in the bed.
Yeah, you gotta, and you know, I am a fledgling author. You know, I'm learning as I go. One of the feedback I heard the most so far from Underworld Dawn number one is it's kind of wordy when Clavius is talking in the beginning. And the reason for that is I'm trying to set him up as a schemer, you know, someone who knows, you know, is like 10 steps ahead of somebody already. And it always annoys me in stories, whether it be books, anime, comics, when I don't think someone has been set up as a schemer and somehow with that explanation, they already know what their opponent's going to do. Well, how do you know that? You haven't been set up as the schemer type of character. You haven't been set up as someone who does any plotting. You just know because you're the main character. And then, you know, the other thing too, and I'm glad that you brought it up, is, yeah, you know, when you watch those mob movies, you know, the theme typically is, hey, you know, we're going to talk a lot before anything, you know, really happens. We have to, whether it's, you know, we have to get permission from, you know, the heads of the five families or whatever, or whatnot. You know, there's a lot of talking that's involved before any, you know, real action happens.
Goodfellas is dialogue. Lots and lots of dialogue.
But, you know, and the other thing, too, is I do try to throw some action in there. So, like, you know, at the end of Underworld Dawn number one, you see, you know, Ellie take on one of the Kepo regimes of the Harkonnen family. You know, so you get some action there. And then you, of course, see Fjord kind of in Chessa go and take over a train station. So there's action in it. You know, I try to make sure people are entertained. And, you know, honestly, if I had the money, I would make those action scenes, you know, drag out a little bit. And I don't mean drag out in a negative way. I mean, like, I'd make there be more substance to those action scenes, I should say. But, you know, when you get that many pages into a comic, although I guess technically it's a graphic novel because it's, you know, more than 25 pages, it gets expensive. You know, once you reach that, you know, 25-30 page mark, it starts to get up there in cost, and it was already expensive. So I was like, okay, I want there to be action scenes, but I have to rein in the cost a little bit because I'm completely funding this on my own, really. So it's not like, I'm not being published by anyone. I don't have any, like, you know, nobody from my family or anything like that's helping you. It's all me. And, you know, I don't say that in a pessimistic way. I say that so people understand, yeah, this is all coming out of my pocket. And if you, you know, if people watching this say, well, you know, the action scenes were kind of short. Well, there's a reason, you know, it costs money.
So let people know, go out, purchase your copy of it, and maybe you'll get better and more action scenes in the next book.
Yes, I would love to put more more pages for the action scenes that I decide to have. So, yeah, please do go support. You know, good news, Underworld Dawn campaign has reached 100% funding, so it's 100% there. It just reached its goal last night.
Now, let's kind of switch gears here, and this is your first time doing a book. And so I imagine it's no surprise when it's been a bit of a learning experience. What are some of the big takeaways that you've kind of really pulled from going down this path?
You know, I have to go with the monetary aspect of it. So, and this is something that I would suggest anybody who is an author who is doing their comic or who wants to start, really get your budget nailed down and then double it, because that's what happened to me. I had the budget, I got the quote from the artist and everything. I'm like, okay, here's their quote, here's my budget, here's what we're going to do. It ended up being double that. And it ended up being double that because, you know, some artists charge for alterations. Some artists, you know, have a certain, you know, panel count that they'll do per page. Thankfully, I've been blessed with my art studio. They've been wonderful to work with. But you know, still the cost, you know, kind of doubled. And for me, it doubled because, not because of the panels, not because of the alterations, but because I initially, Underworld Dawn number one was only going to be about 25 or 30 pages. But the head of the studio, and this is why the studio is so good to work with, is he came to me and said, hey, you know, we really enjoy working on your project. We like your story a lot, actually. We think that you should, you know, increase the page size. And I know some people are going to say, well, you know, of course the artist is going to say that because they want more money. But I genuinely believe that the head of the studio came to me because he cared about the story and he wanted to work with me more and get more out. And he was even like, hey, I know that this is a lot of money. So if you want to, you know, end up, you know, doing payments instead of, you know, one huge sum, I'll do that. So we met in the middle. I said, hey, I will pay you half now and then I'll pay you the other half later. So that to me is, that's how you know, I think, when you've got a really good studio who cares about your story, is when they come to you and they want to do more and they're willing to accept a pretty hefty payment later, if you, you know, as long as you split it up. And then secondly, don't get ahead of yourself. So I was so excited. You know, I would do promotional material. I did holiday posters. I did, I think they call them like animatics. I don't know the right word for it, but it's the one where I, it's on the campaign page. It's like, you know, it's a song and you have some sketches drawn out to kind of still animate the song, like with still animation with some fluid animation. And that was a lot of money. So, and by don't get ahead of yourself, I mean, don't spend so much money on promo material and all this other stuff because you want to draw on a crowd if you have a small audience like I do. And I don't want people to think I'm being pessimistic or negative in any way. I'm just coming at this with a monetary aspect in that I know, you know, this stuff is expensive, as I've said, and I don't want people to spend, you know, all this money on their comic and then spend a ton more on promo material and they don't get the return on it that they expected.
Well, if you've got an outlet of, say, 100 people on your Twitter, that's the most people are going to see what you did. Does it make sense to spend $1,000 on an animation? Sure, it looks cool. But if, you know, if everybody in your outlet that you can advertise to if you sold to every one of them and it wouldn't make the cost of, like, say, the animation worthwhile, you know, then what, you're doing it for vanity at that point, you know, because it makes you feel like you're doing the right things as opposed to look and say, look, I know I have this many people. This is what I can afford to reach out to them. And maybe what's a more cost-effective way of reaching these people, still being memorable? I'm of a belief that, like, a good idea, a good memorable idea, is much better than a really expensive video, you know, or a really expensive idea.
I wouldn't say, at least in my case, I wouldn't say it's for vanity. That's why I said I got overly excited. You know, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get this video out. I'm going to do these holiday posters. People are going to love this stuff. And some people did, you know, the people who saw it ended up liking it. But there again, that's why I say, don't get ahead of yourself and end up spending, you know, all that money and the return not being, you know, what you would want or hope for it to be.
So which holiday, out of curiosity?
I've been doing it for a couple of years. I always do a Halloween and a Christmas one. And the Halloween one for this year is set to be done in the middle of October. And I will say this might be the, I might rethink doing holiday posters. I love doing them. I really do. And I love getting them out there, but they are costly and I can use that money for something else that might be a little bit better. So I may be rethinking what I put my money towards. I'm not talking about investing in less. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I might be putting my money in a different investment bucket, if that makes sense. I don't want people to think I'm being greedy and you're making everything about money. I most certainly am not. What I'm getting at is, you know, I need to spend my money where it makes sense. And I want others who see this and watch this, who are getting into this space, to definitely spend your money where it makes sense. If you do not have a large audience, and let you know, like Nikki P just said, does it make sense for you, monetarily speaking, to spend $1,000 or whatever the money is? It could be $300. Does it make sense for you to spend that money on whatever it is you're looking at, be it a poster, be it a video, whatever it is? And if you do the math and you're like, well, you know, maybe it may not make sense monetarily wise, but I want to do it because, you know, I really like it and it'll be on my website or whatever, and it'll be something people come watch later, then, you know, weigh that into consideration. That's why I prefaced everything I said, you know, for this with, that's why I, you know, I got too excited and too ahead of myself, because I'm more emotionally invested in, you know, getting people to read my comic and like it, that I will do everything I can to get it out there. But monetarily speaking, I may have made the wrong decision on investing in an animatic that, you know, not many people have seen.
Well, but here's another thing, and this, take into consideration, everyone. I'm sure you'll agree that, like, because of how long the process is and how many obstacles you do come up against, there is absolutely something to be said for anything that can re-excite you and reignite you as a creator in the project. You know, something that, like, you know, yeah, this, it's not helping me necessarily bring in a ton more people, but, like, it's helping me to feel excited and, like the project's a little bit new in some way, again, to have something. I don't begrudge that to anybody.
100% disagree, or agree. Yes, agree. Yes, 100% agree.
And if you're going to make Christmas stuff, just make sure you let me know, and I will buy up all of it because I love Christmas. As if the Christmas tree on my desk behind me isn't, you know, enough of a signal.
Hey, you know, I figured, and, you know, that's why I love Christmas as well. I really freaking do. It's like 365 here. I will go to Hobby Lobby, like, as soon as they have Christmas stuff, and just walk around.
I have an entire Christmas section of comics. I don't even read most of the runs that they're from, but they're all Christmas comics, so I get them because they're holiday themed.
Yeah, see, if I knew nothing else about you and I just knew that you like Christmas, I'd be like, okay, I want to go on this guy's show. It's really the best time of the year, folks. I mean, it truly is.
We celebrate every 25th of every month in my house because my wife works for UPS, so we don't get to have, like, a really, really... She's working and sleeping a lot during the holidays, so we don't see her much. So every 25th of the month, we listen to Christmas music, and I call it Giftly Day. You know, and then we keep our Christmas tree up year round. We change the decorations every month and, like, have different skirts for the seasons, but the main tree stays up, and then we put up more trees when the actual holiday comes around.
That's wonderful, but. Yeah, going off what you said, so to give another example, is I have another sci-fi story that I'm slowly working on. You know, it's not something that's going to be out really anytime soon, but I'm slowly working on it. And, you know, like you just said, to keep me excited about the project, I commissioned a character sheet already for the main character. And that's literally just for me to continue to have some sort of like encouragement to keep me, you know, wanting to devote time to telling the story. Not that I don't already want to do it, even if I didn't have the character sheet, but it's an additive, so to speak.
It's forward motion, if nothing else.
Yeah, right. But yeah, that's just another really good example that, you know, I think would be good for some people, that if you're writing a story and maybe you're having a hard time staying motivated, if you've got some money laying around, you know, maybe go get a character sheet of your character. And, you know, you can change how your character looks later. You know, just make sure you let your artist know, hey, you know, I'm writing the story. I want to get a character sheet out. You know, of character A, they're mostly done, but, you know, I may change, like, you know, if it's fantasy character, I may change their armor later on. And just let your artist know. And I'm sure they'll be more than happy to work with you on that in the future. But yeah, definitely is a good way to stay motivated and appeal to yourself as an author.
So maybe the important takeaway is understand why you're doing things before you do them. Like, no, if I'm considering this an investment in the project because I expect that it's going to get me new people watching, or I'm considering this an investment in the project because it's helping keep me excited about what I'm doing with it while there's, you know, a lull in, you know, forward progress. It's being honest with yourself about what you're getting out of any given transaction or any given decision that you're making.
Right. 100%. And, you know, that self-investment, really does go a long way later on. You know, like some people, you know, like I mentioned, some people didn't even know I did holiday posters. They had no idea. So when I told them about that and they said, yeah, this goes back to like, you know, 2019, they had a few years of holiday posters to go back and take a look at. And I was more than happy to, you know, obviously give them the links and stuff like that to go to. So yeah, that investment that I started doing in 2019 really, you know, helped out. I think it was like, you know, last year when people were asking about that for the holiday posters.
I mean, I've been following you for at least a year and I had no idea about these holiday posters. So now I need to go back and grab them all.
Well, yeah, you see, that's the weird thing too with the algorithm is every time they're done, I post them. And I post them a few times throughout whatever the holiday is. So let's say it's a Halloween one. Yeah, that's going to be coming out in the middle of October. I'll post that a couple of times all throughout October and even into November. And I'll do the same thing for the Christmas one. You know, I'll go through Christmas into January. And, you know, for you, like you just said, you've been following me for a year and you just now found out. I think you have to like add a hashtag or whatever. Like I don't work like on, you know, the algorithm aspect very, very well myself. So
it's not even that. It's if you're not posting if you don't post it three times a day, every day, then no one's ever going to see it just because of the algorithm. There's too much other crap for people to see that they're just not going to get to see it in their feed. And it's annoying and it sucks. But like that's the bottom line about how the system works. Like the people that do really good on Twitter are people that have time to live on Twitter. You know, that's I spend more time than most because, you know, elements of what I do, it helps to kind of be mixing it up. But I'll be the first to admit I'm not great at Twitter because I'm just not pithy enough. It's just not my personality. I like long form discussion and things like that.
I definitely agree with you there. I'm not a social media person either. Like the last social media I actually liked that's going to show my age so much was MySpace. That's the last time I actually enjoyed the social media aspects.
Well, I'm an emo kid, so I just remember MySpace being how all my bands shared their music and then getting to go to other people's pages and hear my music on there.
Oh yeah, MySpace was freaking fantastic.
I was so excited when it got picked up and bought and like we thought they were going to bring it back and then they didn't.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know it got picked up and bought. Wow.
Yeah, you're pretty sure you can actually still go to your old MySpace page. The only elements that don't work are the last time I was there, the audio elements didn't work.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they ran into like copyright issues or something like that.
Well, for me, like that's how I used to share all my music. Like
yeah, right. That's what people did. You know, you go to someone's MySpace page and they've got, you know, either it's an embedded media player with, you know, like, you know, 1 to 5 songs, or they just got one song playing in the background.
And mine in particular, like there's still one original song that like that was the only place that existed. Like the original hard drive that it was on crashed. And so the only place I could go to listen to my one song, It's Chupacabra, it was called. And the only place it was on MySpace. And now I can't even listen to it there. I remember it. I remember it in my head. It was a good song, though.
Yeah, all those good songs can definitely make it memorable.
So why don't we tell everyone, well, we still got you here, where they can head out and get their copy of the book?
It's on Kickstarter. So if you go to Kickstarter, type it under Roald Dahn, you'll be able to find it there. I also, you know, post about it on my, you know, Twitter. I try to do, you know, a couple times a day, but as I've just admitted, I am not very good at social media. And then you can also go to my website, underworlddawn.net. And that's where I'm honestly the most active is on my website. You know, to contact me if you want to talk to me about anything. If you need to, you know, if you want advice from me, I'm more than happy to give it. You can, you know, contact me through there as well. I don't have a Discord or Gilded. I disbanded my Gilded. So if you're watching this and you're from my Gilded, I'm sorry. But I will not bow down and kowtown to the Roblox nonsense. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do as far as a community goes. I think I've arrived at a soft conclusion, not a hard one, a soft conclusion that I might wait until the audience grows a little bit before I create a server somewhere. I've also been thinking about putting, you know, just forums on my website. You know, go back to the 90s style or in the early 2000s. So, but yeah, for now, underworlddon.net is, you know, kind of the main hub of where I operate out from. And then my Twitter, you know, at Calvin Galata. And then you can, you know, go to Kickstarter and type in Underworld Dawn. You'll find it there fully funded.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Calvin. Everybody go pick up a copy of this book. It's one that I know I'm definitely been waiting for. So you'll be in good company there.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.